Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany on this third day of January. I'm here to discuss the student loan forgiveness program that Governor Cuomo is proposing with my friends Alan and Vincent and Jim. So Jim Sano, you were the one that sent me the link. What's your opinion of that piece of legislation?
Well, Cynthia, you know, being a legislator in my one of my previous lives, I think it's good in the fact that at least it continues the dialogue, and it's the old theory of at least now that something's on the books, perhaps we can fix it, but it's very short-sighted, really helps nobody, and outside of the benefits that I just said, at least it's a start, and hopefully it continues a dialogue. It's pretty much useless.
Benson?
Good morning. I agree with Jim that it's potentially a start to something. However, I think also like Jim, I'm pretty skeptical. I think more than likely this is something that fulfills more of a political rather than an economic or social function. What I mean by that is, if anyone's listening who's not in New York, the governor is trying to portray himself as a good liberal again after ripping into teachers' unions and organized labor for years. He's now trying to reposition himself to the left. So things like this, some student loan forgiveness for a very small swath of the population, right? Anyone who's graduated since, I believe it was December 2014, and his newfound love of raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the course of several years, which amounts to nothing really, are just attempts to appear that he's more progressive than he actually is. And I think that's how this should be viewed, at least in part.
Alan, you're not in New York. You're in D.C., but you
right.
Read the legislation. What's your feeling?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said previously, and I have to even go a little deeper. So basically, this proposal is a bootstrap plan to supplement the federal repayment program. So people that sign up for these federal repayment programs, the state of New York and went to college in the state of New York, the state would pay their bills for the first 2 years out of school. It sounds good, but the thing that is not, the thing that people don't realize is that these federal programs are kicking as many people out of the programs as they possibly can. So the IBR program, for example, has already kicked out 57% of the people trying to make it through based on little ticky-tack, you know, failure to verify their income. And that's something that Department of Education could do easily on its own through the IRS, but doesn't. So these federal programs are being administered purposely in bad faith. And so anything that the state of New York does to, you know, enhance or build upon that, it's kind of like rearranging deck chairs on his, you know, on the Titanic. I mean, it looks good, but it's going to be completely ineffective and ineffectual. And even if these people get their loans paid for 2 years, well, they're more than likely going to get kicked out of the program year 7, 8, 9, you know, at a later point in time. So it's really not doing much. And Cuomo used to be far stronger on this issue. I would say if Cuomo wanted to do something that was worthwhile, and even if it was non-binding, I would like to see the state of New York pass a bill saying something to the effect that, you know, standard bankruptcy protections and other consumer protections should be returned to student loans or something like that.
Jim, when you were on the city council, Jim, did you take your legislation to the state? Did you speak to the assemblyman and the senator and ask if what you're doing in Albany can be brought to the floor in the Senate and the assembly?
Well, you know, at the time we worked in concert with Representative Tonko on the federal level, and we forwarded it to Senator Gillibrand and Schumer's office, as well as on the state level, we forwarded to all of our elected officials. But you know, as you well know, in politics, rule number one is not to embarrass the other people, especially if you're of the same party. So long before we formulated that, we worked in concert with all of those people, so it was something that they felt that they could get behind. And at the time, Representative Tonko was on the Education Committee. I hope he still is, but I think the thing is that that's the one good thing about this, as I said it previous, is it continues the dialogue that hopefully this will, you know, get some legs. As Alan so aptly stated, it does nothing. You know, he's being optimistic that there will be a year to 7 or 8. I mean, this thing does so little that if you graduated before 2014, it's absolutely, it doesn't apply. So before
right.
it even begins, they've already eliminated, 75 to 80% of the people that we want to help. So forget about year 7 and 8. At year 1, this thing is already dead on arrival.
And, exactly.
It's so unfortunate because he had a good idea in to keep the recidivism rates down to offer prisoners free college education. Great for helping them better themselves. You want to really do something? Let's start on square one. Let's offer, at least to the state universities, free college tuition to all students that qualify, at least for the state universities, and put some real state money back into it. This isn't a radical thought. This was how the government funded all college education back in the 1800s. Now we seemingly can't find the money to do any of this. Yeah.
Vincent?
That was the other piece of, right, the third pillar of Cuomo's superficial move to the left, right, his newfound concern for inmates and things like this, reforming the prison system superficially but not actually fundamentally. So Jim just reminded me of that. But it's interesting, right, if you look at the HESC website, which the original article that Jim sent from ABC7 in New York City links to, right, there's some fine print. No one with a degree higher than a bachelor's qualifies. You have to apply within 2 years of receiving a bachelor's, which misses just how many people sort of are getting jerked around with jobs, and you might not apply right away, right? You have to be current on all federal and New York state loans, which that's part of the problem. People aren't current. That's not really, if you're current, you're not the problem. You don't have that problem. And then there's this vague, which I don't fully pretend to understand because I've just seen it, haven't really analyzed it. It says it may have tax implications. Not sure which way that goes. That may actually work for people. It may not. I don't know. But nonetheless, the language here is of the state paying the money on your behalf, not actual genuine, writing down the debts, erasing the debt. No one's willing to really, they're not willing to take that leap yet in terms of their language and say, the debt is genuinely forgiven, it no longer exists. They're saying, oh, we'll pay it for you. Because it still keeps the idea of the loan as sort of as intact, as justifiable, as sacrosanct, rather than saying, this is kind of money that only exists on a computer. We can make it disappear with a few keystrokes, which is really where I think, the conversation needs to be going to, is that this isn't really real. I just renegotiated some student debt, and I was shocked at how, how almost monopoly money-like the whole situation is. Literally moving money from point A to point B in these sort of electronic accounts, and all of a sudden my entire status changes dramatically. It's crazy. So I think the whole conversation really needs to shift toward genuine writing down of debt and just massive genuine forgiveness, which would give the whole game away, that the emperor has no clothes. But that's where I would like to see this go.
I have a question for all three of you. There are, Alan says there are, what, 40 million Americans strapped with student debt, right, Alan?
Right. It's actually about 44 million, but yeah.
44 million people who have debt that's burdening them. Okay, these are people who, if they didn't have this debt, they could buy a new car, they could buy a house, they could really put some money into the economy. Why do the banks strap all these people with such debt that they really can't contribute to the economy?
Well, the banks are in the business of making money, number one. And as far as concern for people, I mean, look, it's an inherent argument as to the difference of how capitalism and democracy, two inherently opposite ends of the spectrum, have been able to exist for 220-plus years. And that's the balancing act that Congress has to have and take care of the people or take care of the businesses. And capitalism only cares about one thing, and that's making money, and that's the banks. When, you know, unfortunately, the opportunity on a lot of that was never better in 2009 and now lost. And
yep.
That was when you had the banks, when they needed the money, that's when you should have made the push, because for exactly that. And that's why, you know, I took Alan's idea and did that in 2009. And it unfortunately went nowhere because nobody was interested in actually making the banks work for it. We got to fix this right away because, unfortunately, the legislators were as duplicitous with the banks and as guilty of where we got there and that whole, you know, economic downturn and problem of just throwing money out there willy-nilly. I had to make them solid under all of their derivatives and all of the other bad investments, which was foolish. Because we had good people that had debt, and exactly what you said, Cynthia, we could have freed those people from that debt and made the banks whole, as Alan suggested, and stimulated the economy. We could have had three things for one. Instead, we hurry up and ran and just made the banks whole, and now the banks are taking those very TARP funds and lobbying to remove the constraints that were put upon them so they can go back and do the same damn thing.
Now, this is going to be a big election year. Many state houses, many governors, the House of Representatives, a lot of senators, plus the president will be up for re-election. Who's talking about this?
No one, as far as best I can see. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Okay, there's many elected officials or candidates, state level, Congress, the presidency, who'll be running to get elected in November. Who is addressing this issue?
Oh, well, at the present, I don't follow congressional races very closely. I follow state stuff, not at all. So maybe Jim or Vincent can speak to that. But at the federal level, the Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, are proposing, quite frankly, similarly feckless solutions. What they're proposing doesn't do anything to lower the actual price of college or the amount of debt being thrown on the backs of citizens. Certainly does nothing for the 44 million people walking around with student debt today. None of the Republicans, although I'm hopeful Donald Trump might say something, none of the Republicans are saying anything meaningful. Quite frankly, only the Green Party is proposing anything that would legitimately solve this problem. And they're calling for abolition of all student loans. So they're way... they're way out there, and but I applaud them for it. You know, they've got until one of the major party candidates step forward with anything meaningful, my vote absolutely will go to the Green Party.
Now, in view of the fact that Cuomo's proposed legislation is kind of like not real, but kind of smoke and mirrors. What can people who do have student loans going back more than just 2 years, what can they do to pressure the government to say, hey, I'm strapped with debt, help me?
Well, I would suggest they come to studentloanjustice.org. There actually are three good pieces of legislation out right now that would, at a minimum, return standard bankruptcy protections to all student loans. I think that's the right starting point. So whatever they can do to get Congress to go there, I would advise.
That sounds right to me. I mean, at least reinstituting basic bankruptcy protections for student loans. There's a good write-up, I think I said this last time we interviewed, by David Sirota about Biden's role in abolishing that bankruptcy protection for student loans, because there was sort of one of many American myths that the student loan defaulter will beat the system, and something like this, which was happening not very much at all, where people
right.
will take the money for college education, then claim they can't pay it, claim bankruptcy at a relatively young age and be able to basically hit the reset switch. That wasn't really happening. That was smoke and mirrors at the federal level.
Yep.
But reinstituting the bankruptcy protection would be definitely a great start. But I think ultimately what Alan's saying about the Green Party platform, abolition of the debt, combined with actually financing publicly financing higher education, which Jim alluded to earlier, talked about earlier,
yep.
that combination would actually solve the problem. The other, just two other pieces that are missing here. One is that this doesn't help, Cuomo's piece of legislation or whatever, doesn't help people who haven't actually graduated from school. So what you have is, the New York Times pointed this out, I believe, a lot of folks, particularly low income, who have to leave school, sometimes can't go back to school, and they're stuck with the debt, even though they're often leaving for economic reasons and are working in society, productive members of society, as we like to say. They're not getting this benefit, even though they certainly should. And second of all, the 44 million Americans, I wonder what that's what that captures. Is that the number of people who actually have signed their name to the dotted line as having a debt? Because if we think about it more broadly, there's that number of people, which I think that's what the 44 million number reflects. But then there's families and dependents, when they have them, who pitch in and help out. There are parents and grandparents now helping pay kids' student loans well into so-called adulthood, and they're also getting the well tapped. And this is not uncommon. It's sort of like it's becoming less taboo to talk about, certainly among millennials, right, people born after 1980 or 82 or whatever it is, that, yeah, mom and dad, when they can, they help me out, because if they don't, I can't pay my rent, you know, that sort of a situation. So it's not just the 44 million who are impacted. It's often reverberates out beyond that.
And again, you know, the bankruptcy protections, all that, you know, that all part of a bigger package as far as, again, maybe the state funding of college education, at least at state universities, who
yep.
certainly, and it could put such a great stipulation where New York is having experienced such a brain drain, and we continue to lose our populations of southern states or places where opportunity, make the stipulation instead of, 2014 and graduating after that, is that they have to continue to reside in New York State. So now not only are these folks not saddled with debt, but hopefully find employment in New York State, and now they're going to reinvest in not only homes and cars, but in the New York State economy, which we so desperately need. That money comes back to root. And start to treat this no differently than any other loan. You know, if mom and dad want to help out, usually by now, you know, people are, say, like my age, late 50s, early 60s, perhaps their home is unencumbered, and they can refinance the house and pay 3.75 to 4.5, depending upon the length of what you want to do for the house, and get that child out from under that loan. Or, you know, I mean, allow basic refinancing to take place with these loans, and these loans shouldn't be treated any differently, but until the banks can find another way to make 7% on investments, it's not going to happen. Because they're just like everybody else. They're not making anything better than a half or 1% unless they're investing in buildings or, you know, raking people over the coals on these education loans. There's no reason these should be in eights. It's ridiculous.
One other quick point I just want to point out. You know, this Cuomo project is being administered through HESC. And HESC, like all the other guarantors in this country, they're a federal student loan guarantor, they make the vast majority of their revenue on penalties and fees attached to defaulted loans. That is really their cash cow. And so just like the federal program is being administered in bad faith where the majority of people will be kicked out, can we really expect anything better from HESC given the perverted fiscal incentive? I don't think so. In the absence of bankruptcy protections, right, I have no hope for any of these things.
Yeah, it's a total conflict of interest.
Absolutely.
They make their money by, you know, the people they're supposed to be helping, they make their money when they don't succeed. It's totally major moral hazard here.
Pimping.
That's the right term, I think.
I would call it poverty pimping, but
And I'm sure if somebody starts doing some digging, I'm sure they'll find that they've been another one of multiple contributors to campaigns as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, who are the players at HESC, right? Just like, Alan, I read on your website, the players at Sallie Mae have their fingers all into congressional campaigns. They're very involved in politics. I wouldn't be surprised if not in New York, but in other states, but perhaps in New York, I don't know, the student loan industry, the public student loan industry, the state student loan industry, whatever, is also very involved in political networks.
Absolutely. That's really another show in and of itself, actually.
Yeah. It's funny that Alan mentioned Donald Trump. I mean, I won't pretend to speak for the other two gentlemen, but you know, I would say that the three of us probably couldn't be somebody on most issues more on the opposite side than the three of us. But, you know, without beholding to big businesses and lobbyists and money that's already bought so many of these candidates that they're already owned before they even declare, that, you know, he may be one of the few hopes for something like that because – you know, he certainly has benefited and understands the wisdom of refinancing and why that basic tenant isn't available. You know, I mean, it's sad that almost going back to the founding fathers of, you know, rich white men holding the office at the White House, because anybody else to get there has to buy and sell their soul to get there before they can even have the first vote cast for them. And again, another show, another day, but
great.
Amen.
What?
You know,
I agree. You know, I'm a lifelong Democrat and I find it hard to say, but I have to say that Donald Trump, actually, I'm holding out some hope for the guy. His lack of beholdenness to the, as Jim pointed out, I don't know. Could be something. He also has, you know, corporate bankruptcies in his own professional history, so he understands the incredible essential importance of bankruptcy protections to a fair lending system. So we'll see.
I mean, for my part, yeah, I have a little bit of a different perspective. I think if Trump does talk about. Can't believe we're talking about Donald Trump. If Donald Trump does talk about student loans, he's shooting from the hip, right, just like he does with so much else. Shooting from the hip in terms of substance, in terms of actual content or depth. But what he does do, which is very different, is besides in terms of style, which is totally out of the line of what we're accustomed to, leaving, setting that to one side, he will mix – very right-wing, xenophobic, racist, fascistic statements and sentiments with very populist ones. So when he says the trillions of dollars we spent in the Middle East on wars for oil, right, saying a great many things in that statement, which people across the political spectrum from, in some cases, very right-wing conservatives or even libertarians all the way to radicals on the left would agree with, he'll mix that in among, he'll pepper that in with other very nativist, xenophobic, racist, fascist sentiments. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he shoots from the hip and says something to this effect. Do I think it's anything real? No, he's still, you know, his wealth, his situation is still very dependent upon the state, in a way, just like all the rest of them. He's not independent of that, and he certainly doesn't want to bite the hand that feeds. He can, you know, the idea that he has enough money to be in a position to bite the hand that feeds, that wealth is totally dependent upon the goodwill of the other powers that be in the American political economy. He won't really bite it. He'll speak to it. He won't really bite it. So I don't have too much faith there.
Now, I have about as much faith in Trump as the Green Party taking the White House as well. But, you know, I think the point I was trying to make is that we're not hearing anything new from the Republican or the Democrats, and expect more of the same nonsense, that they're beholden to these powers already. All the candidates, they've had a chance. They've all been elected in various positions, either on a state or a federal level, for many years, and they've had the opportunity, even if it died a miserable death on the floor, and they've done nothing. So now all of a sudden they're going to do something. I'd find that most disingenuous and hold out little hope. But as I said, if anybody could pull it off, it would be somebody like a Bloomberg or a Trump, somebody that runs with their own money and isn't bought and sold already.
So ultimately, if this problem continues to fester, both in New York and throughout the country, what would the ramifications of this be?
Well, in my opinion, the best case scenario, eventually every student loans writ large will become one large national joke, and the entire lending system will dissolve into an ether of illegitimacy. Worst case scenario, we become some kind of a debtor police state where, you know, people's lives and livelihoods are crushed increasingly. I mean, already 27 million of those 44 million people are either in default, in deferment, or forbearance, so they're not paying on the loans. It doesn't look good.
I agree. Yeah. I think to say that we have a student loan bubble, it's about to buy. It's coming to a head. Something's got to happen. Either the people got to take to the street, all right, and say, look, we're just en masse not paying it, because if I could, I know everybody else can skate out and they're not going to pay on it, then why am I continuing to pay on it? And a populist movement like that, or more likely is that, as Alan says, people aren't in debt. People aren't, not only are they underemployed, but they're purposely staying under unemployed because it makes no sense. They're making out better not going to work and working for, say, a $40,000 or $45,000 a year job, of which $1,200 a month now has to go to a student loan. I mean, such disincentive. That's why they have major piece has to be, if not forgiveness, at least refinancing of this debt down to a reasonable level that people can manage and go to work and pay the debt in a timely manner without getting crushed with fees and penalties and ridiculous interest rates.
Completely. I mean, even if it was, hey, listen, you who've had a debt for 20 years, you paid back the principal at least once over, it's over. We're letting it go. Even that would be major progress. It's not where it should be, but it would be far better than anything now proposed. But the long-term ramifications are, low economic growth. It's a drag on the economy. It's not putting money back into circulation. It's not leading to, you know, the banks are making investments that are not necessarily conducive to economic growth for the country as a whole. That's one basic problem. The other is that it creates politically a debtor class, a massive debtor class and growing, that, you know, makes the whole system illegitimate, which, you know, in the long, I hate to say it, but perhaps things need to get worse before they get better, because it is illegitimate. The debts aren't legitimate. This is something that in other industrial countries is seen as a right, not a privilege. It's already given, right, we've already seen the lie given to the idea that everyone's got to go to college and this is what you must do, and if you don't, you're somehow less worthy as a human being or as an American or whatever.
Right.
The next one to fall is really that the debt is illegitimate. That's starting to catch on. It's just taking a while because there's still this notion that we must pay our debts with no real critical look at the function of debt or what, you know, how it operates and who benefits. There's real issues here. Historically, when there's major levels of debt, if there isn't debt forgiveness, there's major pushback. At some point, people do that. It does take a long time historically, but it does happen. And when people try to collect back rent, it doesn't often go well. So politically, this is not only hurting the economy, but it's also hurting any semblance of a democratic republic we've ever had. So it's dangerous on many, it's problematic on many levels.
I agree. I would just offer one ray of hope. As I mentioned, there's literally three good pieces of legislation in the House right now, federal House, that would at a minimum return standard bankruptcy protection. So that really, I think, is the stick that will force the government and the lenders and the guarantors, et cetera, to act in good faith with the students. So refinancing and forgiveness programs will actually be compelled, you know, the lenders will be compelled to act in good faith. And so I would recommend that everybody listening to this go to studentloanjustice.org, and you can see on the main page more about this very important legislation.
Thank you, gentlemen. To be continued. You've been listening to Vince Smitho, Jim Sano, and Alan Collins on Focus on Albany, talking about student loan debt. If there is anybody out there who has a comment or a criticism, can go to hashtag Focus on Albany and tell us what you think. Thank you, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.